My hand is anything that But in a sense, to some realization, things I suppose bring my hands in my pocket and find no keys out. And then when I looked down, I realized it wasn't a pocket, but also it was my trousers. These little trousers I seem to be wearing some sort of diaphragm or something or the other. I don't know what it was, it looked like the chair. It only seems like I was in a billowy cloud or something. I said, my God, what's this? And I said, well, what do I do? What's happening? I could see myself being taken in from indecent exposure or something. And yet I realized that I couldn't be, because that body of mine was in that car thing, that tandem thing, and yet I just didn't make head or tail. I was so confused, and the next thing I knew was, as if for a fleeting second, I must have lost consciousness, I found myself in my bedroom. And I thought, well, it's funny, I don't remember getting through the door, because I've got no key to open it. And I thought, well, at least there's a chance now to get a suit. Put something on, maybe something respectable. And I mentioned what I might well do, and I put my hand out to take hold of the knob of the thing, and every time I put my hand, I couldn't feel anything. Mm-hmm. Wasn't any more solid, I thought, well, what is all this about? I was so perturbed, and I thought I'd sit down and just sit on what was bed. I was in bed, and I thought, when I thought that I was sitting, I mean, I wasn't sitting on anything solid. I was in this peculiar sensation. I felt as if anything around me which looked still real wasn't real anymore. And I felt myself, yes, I felt soft enough, but nothing else in the room. I went around the room trying to touch things, magic shelf, clock, and all various things. Nothing seemed solid anymore. And I shouldn't wake up out of this. I just couldn't appreciate that fool. I'd actually died. And yet I'd seen what was me being put into this ambulance thing. I thought, I don't know, this is all so stupid. And I thought, well, I must be dreaming. This isn't possible that I'm dead, because if I were dead, I wouldn't be conscious of all this. If I was in any sort of conscious state being dead, I'd be conscious only obviously of things of another world, not this. Mm-hmm. And I didn't quite know what to do. And I sat down in my chair, which was beside the bed. That didn't seem solid yet. I must have had some realization of solidity, because I sat in a sitting position and I put my hands out beside the chair. And it didn't seem, to my touch, didn't seem solid yet. I was sitting. Yet I wasn't sitting. Mm-hmm. And I thought, this is a strange thing. What can I do next? Then I thought to myself, well, I wonder if I'm dead, which I don't think I am, I must be in some sort of dream which I've made up, might be as good. Guess as well if I lie on the bed, sitting in this chair, why I should be that dead. And I suppose I sort of thought of something else sort of way, by lying on the bed, I'd come out of my dream, and I'd then be back to normal. So I got my keys on the bed, and I wouldn't sound stupid, because then I lie on the bed, I'm conscious of lying on the bed, and I start seeing the foot in the bed, and yet I feel, then wake up, and then yet I'm being supported in some strange way. To a little amount of feeling of lightness over time, I thought, well, this is the lightness of my head, and then I thought to myself, how can it be lightness of my head, and the head's on my body, and that thing going off to what bumps in the hospital. And I thought, this is all so stupid, this is just a silly dream. And I thought, well, best to close my eyes and just sort of see nothing. And I thought, well, that would probably be some help out of this consciousness. And I closed my eyes and I thought, if I try to think of nothing, the only time I think of nothing, it seems the only time I think of something. Mm-hmm. And it's my mother suddenly came into my thoughts, and so to see. But it wasn't my mother, as I passed in the episode, which is a video. They did, but she passed over, she was going for 8 years, you know, tonight. And as you see, my mother, in my mind's eye, as a little baby, I could see her, like, seeing her so often in Freddie Johnson's album that we had. Just as I remember her sitting in a chair, looking very smart and very elegant, with a very large hat with an enormous feather, which was as a child fascinated with this enormous feather curled up his head, and he was standing at her feet. And a little suit with a big yellow straw hat, and he said, so that we can end this photograph. I suppose then I would have been about 5 or 6. And I said, I remember my mother, that is how she was as a younger, much younger woman. Not as I last remember her. And I was thinking, it was as if I'd seen my mother in this photograph. There she was, standing between this bed, looking patient. And I thought to myself, well, this is also so extraordinary. Why should I have seen mother? Here she was at that time, her life, when she was a young and vital woman. And of course, as I saw her, she was dressed exactly identical in English remembrance that I had in that photograph. And somehow, it was as if I could hear her voice speaking to me. And I could hear her say, no, don't worry, I'm here. I'm sorry I'm late. And I thought to myself, it was Mr. Keeler's that I was listening and talking to myself. And I say to myself, what is the devil she mean about being late? And what's she doing there, standing looking like that? Because that was the years of this, that photograph come alive. And I was told, well, I must be going to a very weird dream. And I could hear her saying quite distinctly in a strong, clear, firm voice, don't worry, dear. I'm sorry I'm late. It's perfectly all right. And I could hear myself saying in reply, what am I doing here? And what are you doing there? What's all this about? I must be dreaming. And then I heard her say, you're not dreaming, dear. You're not dreaming. You're here with me. I said, what do you mean I'm here with you? I'm here in my own room, lying on my own bed. And you know, mother, you've been dead many years now. She said, but my dear, that's exactly what's happened to you. You're dead. Now you're with me. And I said, I remember hearing myself saying, but then if I'm dead, then why am I here in my room? And what are you doing there all dressed up like that? As you were many years ago in that photograph. She said, oh, well, I did that. For various reasons. One, because I thought it would take your roots. And also your roots was very fond of my bed, that hair. But if you remember how you used to go back there later years, and you used to say to me, oh, you did eat and tell up in those days, you don't seem to bother now, because Kenny, mother got to the point where she never bothered very much about dress, and she used to have a moment because she'd always been a very smart woman up to over the last few years of her life. And it was a big joke between us, and I used to make mother dress up a bit, and I used to often draw her hair for her in the last few months and years of her life. And just like she would dye this, and she used to be such a fussy woman in the earlier years. But you don't remember, dear, how you used to do my hair, and how you used to do things for me, you used to fuss at me, how you used to try and make me keep up to the mark, as you said. So I thought I'd better come looking smart to fetch you. And I'm sorry I'm late. I knew that you were soon coming, because I sensed you waiting for some 3 days. Because although you don't know it, she says, you had a stroke, you know. You had a heart attack, and your heart's been there for some time. I said, mother, don't be stupid. I said, oh, my heart has been totally all right. I've never had any signs of heart trouble. She said, my dear boy, she said, you know you've had heart trouble for at least 12 months, and we've been with you constantly. And I knew that sooner or later that you would be coming any time, any day. But she said, you know, I couldn't be here earlier today, and I didn't get the realization of morning quickly enough, but I came as soon as I could. And what seems perhaps a long time for you was only a few seconds, not very long since your body was taken away from mortuary. I said, mortuary? What are you talking about mortuary for? I said, here I am, totally all right. I said, but I would like to have some decent clothes. I said, I can't have my wardrobe. She said, you don't want to buy a bathroom wardrobe. You don't want to start thinking about that. If you want to wear a suit, then we have to go and speak. Think hard about yourself, she said. You look like a warrior, she said. I said, Mother, how can you dress yourself just by torches? And it's exactly what people do, though. But they don't always tell deeply nothing to dread. And I said, of course you can wear a suit. You can wear what you want. You can wear a Japanese kimono if you want to, which reminds me, Mother. I said, do you look like a kimono you used to wear? And then she said, oh, that. She said, I've got a much better one now. Was the one that I was the choice of the one she had that I brought back many, many years ago on one of my trips when I went to Japan. She was so fond of it because she wore it out and she still clung to it, even the end of her. Anyway, she was laughing and joking away and it all seemed so natural. She said, come on, she can get off that big thing. She says, baseball. I said, I'm not a boy. And I said, I'm a man who was 70 yet. She said, you're fucking man, I was 70, you're only 20. You look at yourself. I said, what do you mean, look at myself? She said, tell me my English, she says, and that you'll see yourself as you are, and you'll feel as you really are, not as you think you were. I said, Mother, you confuse me. I said, you tell me, she told me I just died, but I feel perfectly all right, thinking that I can't visualize myself as being dead, and it seems so odd. And yet at the same time, so natural. She didn't curse as natural, so because she didn't understand it. She said, you're not old anymore, because you are dead. Now come with me. She said, come along, come with me. And she was as hard as a child, because she was sent under these circumstances. She said, was. So I took hold of her hand, and she asked me so. And the next thing I remember was that, because I think I was floating, floating is the only word I can use, through the ceiling, houses in the air. How about the chimney tops you see in the game? It's the most peculiar sensation. I would like to see the pan. I knew this must sound terribly stupid, but I said to her, as I seem to be floating through the air, I could see this extraordinary sensation, you know, because I was conscious of Mother at this moment, but I couldn't see her. And it was as if I was part of it, because my mind was so confused, and sometimes I was so fascinated, looking down underneath me, and on the chimney tops, and me going through the air like this. And I said, some reason, all I could think about was Peter Pan, Mother's Reindeer. I know this sounds so stupid, but I said to myself, this can't be true. This is one of those stupid dreams about that can. Whatever all this is about, it's not what Mother says. It's just a stupid game, and I should wake up. Anyway, I was floating away, and it wasn't so far, then as much as I could see underneath me everything, and the winding boat, and then gradually we seemed to come to the open sea. I couldn't. This is ridiculous. If I were dead, and this boat was my mother, I'd be going up to him. I wouldn't be floating over the earth like this. I wouldn't be interested. Anyway, we seemed as if we were floating or moving in the air for a very long time. It seems if we were going over France, as I could see that we were going over the channel, and I could see the lights and the harbour, and I could see all so much that was associated with years previously, on a few other occasions that I had been in an airplane. And it all seemed most weird and most wonderful. And then I thought to myself, this is unbelievable. No one would believe this. And I wake up and tell them I dreamt all this. They say, oh, this is stupid. This is not possible. It's just a stupid dream. Anyway, I must have risen higher in the atmosphere or something, because it all became invisible. I just couldn't see it anymore. It's as if I was floating in clouds. And there was illumination. There was brightness, intense brightness, which I took to be the sun. But I soon found it wasn't. And I was floating and floating and floating from this billowy, billowy cloud, which seemed for ages and ages and ages. And then all of a sudden, on the horizon, or what I suppose one would call the horizon, I was seen intense, golden glow. And it seems as if I was going further and further and further into this glow. It seemed to be permeating the universe and binding it. And as I became more conscious of this, so began gradually to take some shape. You know, I can describe it. And it was as if I was entering, well, I suppose, let me say, it was a vast landscape. There were trees, there were hedges, there were bushes, and I could see that there were here and there dotted about little houses. Things seemed to have a golden glow, seemed to be no other color at all but this golden, golden glow, if you will. But I stood thinking about this in the space, and unconscious of it just around in the back of me. And I began to wonder what all this was. And gradually it seemed as if we were descending or going down. And as I went lower and lower and lower, the golden glow seemed to lose itself. And where there were hedges and trees and houses and so on, gradually began to be sufficient color. The ground seemed to have been, it was obviously to my appearance, grass took on a beautiful green shade. The trees seemed to be green and brown and russet for various shades. And the houses began to take more different shape, and I could see that the walls were white, and the doors and the window frames looked colourful and painted, various colours presumably according to the individuals who lived there. And then gradually we seemed to come down or to sink into what was a very pretty house in a sitting in the gardens, this way to describe it. And there were flowers everywhere, profusion of flowers, all colours, all different types. There were daffodils, there were tulips, and there were narcissi, and all the flowers I remember that my mother and I were so fond of, which we were both great gardens in other years. Mother was always out in the garden until she was 2 years to go. And then I would see this pretty little house with this lattice windows and this pretty little door, which was around this door. There was what we, I only remember now, it was very like the house we had in my young days when we were together, the whole family in the countryside. It was a house which my mother was particularly fond of, in which she brought all the children up, in which my father and all of us spent possibly, I think, the happiest days of our life. It was almost, you might say, a spectacle in this house, and it was so familiar that I began myself saying, oh, mother, this is so like the house you used to have in Norfolk. She said, yes, dear, it is the house you used to have in Norfolk. I said, don't you see, but how can it be the house if we're dead and that house is on earth, if it's still in existence? It can't be. She said, but yes, it is that house. The house here on earth was the earthly house of our earlier years, but this is what we have created by the love that we had for the house and the happiness that we had in it and the family life that we shared there. This is it. This is the reality of it. Anyway, we went in there with my father, sitting, as I always remember him, sitting in the evening in a chair, a red chair, which was so fond of, a big velvety chair. I didn't think it actually was velvet, but it was something which looked rather like velvet studded, the chair with very heavy legs. And that was a very impressive chair. It was almost his chair. And we children never sat in it. I think once or twice I sat in it when he wasn't around. He was almost fast, but it was almost as fun as I was there he was. But he looked so young and so virile, so as I remembered him as a young man. And there he was sitting, honestly waiting. And I thought to myself, oh, this is just too fantastic. It's like as if I'd gone back 40 years or more to my youth. And in the window there were little pots of flowers, and I was so loud, and my mother, she used to brush the leaves down and bring them back into our room. And she used to dump these potted flowers. But the only thing that I didn't like, the mother always had them in the window, she was always so fond of music, Jack was dead. On the big circular table there was this heavy shiny old clock thing with brother head with bubbles on. And those children, how we used to look forward to the meals and how we used to lay that table and put the clock back afterwards and the potted plant would go in the stick. I remember the table so well with this big car have legs like lions, claws, lions, feet. And then it's also when we bounce left of it all, it's so real, so beautiful, and yet there's something about it that the head of glow, I can mean, begin to describe it. And the way my father gave me a great welcome, put his arm around me, and said, well, chef, you've done it, you've done it. I thought to myself, he has done what? And I still couldn't get beside him, and I hear that I was dead. He said, come, come, sit down, let's talk about things. So as he talked about what we talk about, it's wonderful to see you and mother. But why didn't you come? And mother came, went to, he said, I wanted to stay here and be here to welcome you when you arrived. I knew mother would be all right. Besides, mother wasn't alone, you know. I said, what do you mean mother wasn't alone? Mother was the only one who came. He said, my dear boy, he said, don't be so stupid. You may not have seen them, but there were dozens of people there. I said, you mean dozens of people? I am so mad. He said, you may not have seen the others because at the moment you are not in a position to see. You can only see that which you yourself make possible. But there are lots of other people there, wonderful people which you'll get to know, and we should introduce you to, that will be able to tell you much more even than I can tell you. But what really matters now is for you to be at home and be comfortable and be happy and relax and not worry about all this nonsense they call death. I said, but you know, you keep saying this business that I'm dead, but I'm not dead. You see, of course you're not dead, barely, but the world thinks you're dead. And since they don't understand anything else, there's not very much you can do about it. I said, don't you realize that there's something very different about you? He said, look, come and look in here. So I went with him and looked at what appeared to be a full-length mirror. Looking back, I knew that mirror so well, it almost stood just on the top of the staircase, which I always thought as a child was a stupid place to have a mirror. But because of the woman, you were going to walk in and bump into yourself. But for some reason or other, that mirror was always on the top of the staircase. And I realized that it was very nice in the neighbors, but at the time, I remember that you sort of stand there and just preen yourself before she went downstairs and walked in the guests and they were riding into a party or something. Anyway, I looked at myself, this year, Deborah was, as I remember myself, thinking it would stay, looking so young, and my hair was parted, and I remember seeing the cliff that I had that used, no matter how much I used to brush my hair, it almost fell down just over my eye. And there I was in a suit, and I remember so well, the steam stripes, dark grey suit, and high collar. Oh, I remember myself so well in those days, and there I was dressed very much the same. And I thought to myself, but if I did, why am I looking like I did in English, King Edward's days? It must be so odd, why should I have to look? I look, why not? Look as I did in George V's time, or even for that matter, as I was a child in Victoria's time. It all seems so weird, so mixed up. Pharisees don't tell quite about that. So all you've got to think about is that you are you. And you're very much alive, and you've got no aches, no pain. I said, look, Father, I know that there's no pain of any consequence in my life, but he knows that I've been dying, he's dying heart trouble, and so on and so on. He said, you were lucky. He said, you must be grateful that you didn't have aches and pains and sickness and all the rest of it. You were lucky that you came if you did. He said, it's just like you, of course, got down and dead asleep. Because there you are, you can't help it. At the same time, you should be grateful. And then they went on in laughing, chatting away, and I began to feel relaxed, I suppose, the first time. I began to accept it. I thought, well, I really have to accept this, and I'm dead. But why is it so much fascinating about death? I remember myself when I used to go to chapel in the old days. Mother was a great chapel girl. We used to sing the hymns, and I used to find it all very entertaining as a boy. And later, as I got older, I began to think, well, it's a way of life, one expects you, but I don't really believe it. I read one or two books in the time, and I read one or two things about books and terms of religion, and I think then I began to go, yeah, I know something about these business before. To spiritualism and all that nonsense. But I didn't take me too seriously. And my father said, he said, you're on the right track now, boy. We used to defy that man and me and all of us. We used to say that the moment of the devil. My goodness, man, what a difference it would make if people knew and understood about that. You wouldn't be the little bit of you being, and his mother and I and others were. We knew what had happened. We understood more sincerely and deeply about these things. Tragedy is that we don't know these things on the earth, which is, I think, good pity. Because I think if we knew these things and understood them, it'd make such a vast difference to our lives when we're there. And also a great difference from the past place in the world that we are. We just don't know that the world is stating and being in the sewer of what I was everything was basically down in a nice way, you know. Anyway, it's going to sit down in front of the fire. I said, fire? I'm placed the fire. I said, what do you want the fire here for? If you're supposed to be a gem, he said, we're not a gem at all. He said, well, we're in a condition of life or a flame of life. Well, anything that's very real and very natural to us, it is a form of heaven, perhaps, if you like. But my idea of heaven has always been this little house, my own little garden, my own little world life. And that's what we've got here. Fancy, Papa, you've been dead, if you are dead, for about 25, 30 years, you know. He said, yes, he said, that's my business. Do you think of time? Well, it's 20, 25 years in time, it's still my little world. It wasn't very much when you think about it. So he said, people seem to think that in 25 years that you should know all the ends of the house and know everything. He said, I'm content to be a man. And eventually, I suppose, I shall progress into a higher state of being, but this to see, and the normal family are together again, then perhaps we'll begin to make some changes. But I want you to both of you, and Mother wants to both of you back into the old home, so that when you came, you feel at home, you really feel that there was something to come to, something that you needed, was something that was full of love, something which was so important to all of us. And here we are. Back again as a family, and let's enjoy ourselves and be happy, and make our own things about other things. And that's how I came over. And of course, there's a lot more I could tell you, but I can't tell you now. But perhaps for some later days I can. How I then intend to come to a
walk. It's been interesting, Mr. Morgan. Thank you. What are you doing now,
young son? Well, of course, I'm talking about what happened some while back.
Mm-hmm.
But what I'm doing now, I'm teaching the youngsters. I'm a school teacher. And there's another very funny thing, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I always, as a young man, was very keen on school. And it was my ambition to be a school teacher.
Mm-hmm.
And I always thought to myself, oh, if I had an opportunity, I, you know, I'd like to be a school teacher. But of course, mother and father, they were very good, you know. They lived well. But they finally put me to engineering.
Mm-hmm.
And that was his ambition, I think, as a boy, to be an engineer himself. He didn't come off. And I suppose he thought, you see, it's happening to me. Anyway, I suppose in my own way, I was quite a good engineer. I wasn't famous or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
But I was good at the job. But in my heart, I always wanted to be a teacher.
Mm-hmm.
And now I'm here, I'm a teacher. And I have a wonderful little class, the youngsters who have come over the last few years, who I've been able to teach and help. Teach things really matter. Not a lot of the youngsters have been taught, this is no good value. We've taught so much that is unimportant on earth.
Mm-hmm.
But here you can teach the things that are real matter. Anyway, I must go. I'm very happy, and I'm very happy to spend with you, but I wasn't going to talk to
you. Oh, yeah, you have.
Yeah.
Oh,
may I extend best wishes to Mr. George?
Oh, yeah.
Blessings to you both. I've heard so much about you and Dr. Marshall and other things. Goodbye, my dear.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Well, thank you so much.
Bye.